Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is sponsored by R.W. Knudsen Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice, a welcome addition to anyone's sleep routine. Pace Case, if you know me, and you do, you know that I'm working all hours of the day, all hours of the night. So the sleep that I do get has to be very good sleep, and I'm always looking for ways to up my sleep routine. Sometimes I'll read a book to go to sleep. Sometimes
The Bachelor?
That book keeps me very awake. It's very engaging. That never puts me to sleep. I will sometimes just put down my cell phone after a long day of looking at a screen. It's nice to get some time away from the screen. I also will incorporate some R.W. Knudsen Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice. It truly makes you go to sleep a little easier. It's the thing you need to help you drift off into the dreamland.
As more and more people are looking to prioritize sleep, Organic Just Tart Cherry is having a moment thanks to Tart Cherry's potential sleep-related benefits and potential to aid in muscle recovery when you get those gains like clues. We're seeing this in the viral Sleepy Girl Mocktail trend on social media. R.W. Knudsen has a whole lineup of natural juices with zero added sugar, so you can feel good about adding them to your wellness routine. It's all about celebrating those daily wins. Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice is made from tart cherries, which may help you get a better night's sleep because they have natural melatonin.
R.W. Knudsen crushes only 100% real ingredients, so you can crush everything you do. Pick up a bottle at your local grocery store today.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Pace Case.
This is Bachelor Clues, and today, instead of This Week in Bachelor Nation, we have something very special in store with us today for an in-depth conversation about the state of the game, everything that's been happening in Fantasy Suites, everything that's just happening around the nation. We have Webby-nominated podcasters, journalists, and co-hosts of the Love to See It podcast, Emma Gray and Claire Fallon. Thank you guys very much for joining us.
Wow. Incredible wow. Intro. Can I hire you to be my personal PR person?
right now. Thank you for having us. Always an honor.
I mean, the nation has been going wild. So you two are the only ones we would want to talk to about everything.
Yes. Things are afoot in the nation.
Well, let's just jump right in. Yeah. There is some wild shit happening today. In addition to the news that broke that the Queen of England has died at the age of 96, we also get news that Eric Schwer did a little blackfacing in high school, and the pictures have now emerged. So I don't even want to get into the moralistic judgments of this. I want to talk about what does this mean for the show? This type of thing seems to happen virtually every season. It's now an exception to the rule if there's a season that goes by without some kind of problematic shit surfacing in somebody's background. What can the producers do about this? Is there anything that they can do?
Stop casting so many white men from conservative towns. Like,
But then you run into the problem. I mean, Nate still had something emerge from his past that caused a bigger kerfuffle. I mean, right. That specifically, yes, that could be alleviated. I don't know if there's anything they can do to stop everyone finding out at least once a season that one of the frontrunners is a total dirtbag. I think that it's very hard to suss out all of the ways that an American male might be a total dirtbag these days.
Right. They'd have to take over their dating profiles, gather all of their yearbooks. I mean, is this the next frontier for Bachelor casting? They need to step up their game and get all the yearbooks?
I do think they're going to have to start requisitioning yearbooks.
Like, I do too. I think that's a part of this because I know after Kirk Connell's problematic photos surface in Bachelor season 25, they did hire someone who now goes through incoming players' social media with them and says, you need to delete this. You need to remove this. You got to get rid of this. Yes. I can't tell you how I have that information, but I have that information.
It makes sense. I mean, we do know that contestants do a fair amount of scrubbing. It makes sense that they would have someone help them do that. I know we'd also seen some Reddit posts emerge of things that had been deleted from Eric's social. He had unfollowed Joe Rogan.
Yeah, the Trump White House and also...
Two Kings.
Yeah, wow, just a beautiful pairing right there. And also untagged himself in a photo in which he was surrounded by other white men, many of whom were wearing MAGA hats from 2016. So clearly he had... just scrubbing your social media at this point.
I'm glad to know that they saw all those red flags and they were like, here's what we got to do, Eric. We're going to sit down and we're going to delete those. That should take care of everything. It's like, no, that was maybe your red flag, but something else might be out there that would come out.
But I mean, that's the nature of the show. I mean, as we talk on our show at length about this, they don't actually care about those things. They care about how it could hurt the image of the show. And so if they can get rid of the image, if they can scrub that clean, that's all they really need to do. And these things really only affect people when they get into late phases of the game, when you're into the final rounds of either playoffs or potentially, like as Eric Schwer is now, a ring winner. We don't know if he's a ring winner, but like he's the only choice left for Gabby Windy. So ostensibly he will be that.
They certainly didn't have that person during Victoria Fuller's tagged photos with the white Marlin Lives Matter extravaganza.
Yeah, and they should have known by then because of what happened with Garrett and his Instagram likes.
Right.
This has been an ongoing issue for a while and they're always late to plug the holes.
But the first person that this happened to, I mean, at least the first person that it was like publicly made available was Lee Garrett on Rachel Lindsay's season. And he had tweets that he issued, not even retweets or likes, things he was saying that were incredibly problematic. And they brought that into the Men Tell All. They made him answer for those tweets live on stage. Many people thought that Lee Garrett was purposely cast as a racist on the season with the first Black Bachelorette, including Rachel Lindsay. She has said that on podcasts and things. So is this, do you guys think, a strategy of the producers still at this point? Or do you think it's an error by them that they wish this wasn't happening?
That's a good question. I don't know if it's the kind of attention they want to be getting at this point.
Yeah.
I think that I personally felt like the backlash against Lee Garrett was so extreme that I and not even him, but later against Garrett, that it tarnished one of their winners and created like a huge headache for them. That my impression was that they had said, oh, well, it's one thing to stir up this drama with one guy with problematic tweets who can be racist on this season and cause some crazy drama. It's another thing to have the person who wins the show looking tarnished. And we've created this mess for ourselves. We need to prevent that from being an issue. So my impression was that they were trying to lock it down, you know, doing these scrubs and trying to prevent it, you know, contaminating their chosen ones. But it's certainly possible that they feel like all press is good press.
Yeah, I certainly don't think they were looking for an another Rachel Kirkconnell thing.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that they really courted this per se, but I also think that, like, we know the type of people that are most likely to get cast on a reality dating show like this. People who want to be on a television show about marriage, who are aware of the things that they could get from that kind of exposure. And I think that there is a strong Venn diagram of people with varying kinds of problematic pasts that are going to end up in that casting pool. And so even if they're not courting it actively, I think, like, the machine that the show has become does attract a certain pool of people.
And then it's just an odds game, because if this stuff comes out in late playoffs and this person isn't your ring winner, fine, throw them under the bus, villainize them. The fourth audience, the people at home, can hate them, and that's even good for the show. As long as the good guy wins in the end, everything's fine. But it's turning out that the good guy is almost never winning now. It's always the bad guy.
And I do wonder if that's part of why the show has really, in my mind, kind of pivoted away from really investing in that, like, ring winner and the lead, and more just, like, mining the emotional trauma of it all.
And, like, the constant pivot, right, to the next season.
Right. Like, they're ready to dispense that with that couple as soon as they're announced as the winners. Like, move right along.
They need to immediately turn our attention to a lead we know very little about and a cast we know nothing about, because we haven't had an opportunity to become disillusioned with any of them yet. And by the time we know enough about them, they're like, anyway, this season's almost over. Stay tuned for The Bachelor starting soon.
Yeah, don't look, Johnny's over here. He's in Mexico. Don't think about that guy.
Well, speaking of how they're now presenting the game, and as you're saying, putting virtually no investment into who the next lead is or the ring winner, disowning them almost immediately in certain circumstances, at least with, like, Clayton and Susie, I think it was because they didn't follow the rules of the game as set up by the producers. So I think there was a little bit of, like, vindictive retribution by the producers and how they treated them. And obviously how they've treated Clayton this entire season. He's more of a fucking character in this season than most of the guys are. But let's start talking about this season. What did you think of Fantasy Suites, which just aired earlier this week in two episodes across Monday and Tuesday? What did you think of breaking up the narrative threads, how they presented it, how they had that forced girl chat at the beginning where they're, like, literally reading a fucking script about which guys have said which love level?
Oh God. It was such a marathon. Yeah. It was so exhausting.
I'm like, which piece do I address first? Like,
I mean, the girl chat just feels like such a wasted opportunity where they could be working their relationship in more organically, and instead
we've seen it.
Yeah, we've seen it.
And it's delightful.
They want to have that opportunity to fill in the kind of voiceover work that they would normally be doing while the lead does B-roll of them, like, staring at the ocean.
Staring over a balcony.
Or, like, walking down a beach. And they're like, we'll just have them say it to each other instead. But that's, like, not how you have a conversation with someone. It doesn't really.
You don't just, like, announce your feelings about four successive people without giving the other person, like, a minute to chime in until their allotted time.
I don't know what you're talking about. This is how all of my hangs with my BFFs go. I go down my roster. I say what love level we're at.
No one gives any feedback. And then after 15 minutes, you're like, okay, your turn now.
Yeah. I just feel like Fantasy Suites Week, it's hard to believe that it was successful in Michelle's season so recently and, like, nothing went horribly awry, because it feels so fraught now. Like, there's very little way to get through Fantasy Suites without some sort of emotional trauma being inflicted on the lead and at least one of the contestants, because there's so much more open conversation about what might happen in the Fantasy Suites. And that brings up a lot of feelings and temptation to break the format and to be like, if it were really me, you would just not go through with this format. I know what goes on in there. Like, I don't see Fantasy Suites ever really returning to a regular part of the format and the way that it used to be, the way it's been going the last couple of years. It just gets more and more lumpy and misshapen and messy.
Why do you think it's getting messier?
I do think that it has to do with how much more openly contestants have started to talk about what happens in fantasy suites. Mm. It never used to get talked about. Like, people would have sex with a couple people or one person or no one. Usually it wasn't discussed very much. And when people started to talk about it, it was frowned upon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you could talk about it if you were saying, my faith prevents me from even going to a fantasy suite. But other than that, until really Nick kind of was the first one to kind of break that veil of secrecy.
Yes. Nick broke our beloved game.
He broke it.
Okay, I'm going to have to step in right there. All right. First of all, the great one did not break our beloved game. He created a new era of it, potentially. But Vial is famous for saying that he only had sex with Vanessa Grimaldi, even though the show promoted the idea that he had sex with all three players, including Rachel Lindsay, who has said many times she got drunk on the plane as she flew in because she found out Trump was elected.
Donald Trump won. Yeah. Donald Trump won that night. She was not trying to bone. Like,
they made Raven do that whole orgasm montage.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God, right. Yes. How could any of us forget?
But yeah. I would argue that the reason the fantasy suites round has gotten so insane is actually what they started doing in season 24 with the panic room, where they put all of the remaining players in the same room to live together, to have them looking eye to eye when they come back from a fantasy suite. That was a level of trauma that the producers are inflicting.
Yes.
And I think producers trying to escalate the trauma, they're chasing the dragon of the fence jump moment from season 23 that they built an entire season to. And the reason the fence jump moment worked, they don't understand why it worked, the current producer class. They believe it worked because it inflicted a trauma on Colton that made him cry and want to flee, and everybody was in tears. They think tears is the end game here. It's not. It's mystery. We want to know why he's jumping the fence. That's why that moment worked. What led to this moment?
And also, that's not a moment that producer intervention can neatly recreate, right? Mm. Because that is like the human element of this show. Like, he did.
And if every season ends with all the contestants trying to flee, it's not going to be a mystery anymore. We're going to be like, of course they're all trying to leave. It's a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
That works one organic time. And then you like can't just remake that.
What about Rated R when he fled through the bushes? Do you guys remember this?
But that did not pack. That did not pack the same emotional punch, Lizzie.
I think though, like if you have talented producers, like season 24 came along and our fence jump moment was Sweet Nums, Bring Her Home to Us. Again, that had an element of like extreme emotion. She's crying. And it has mystery. Who the fuck is she talking about? Bring who home to us? What is going on here? And we have to keep watching until the end. But now they've, I think, mistakenly come to understand that those same moments can be replaced with a lead saying, get me out of here, or this is over, or I'm broken. And it's like that we expect you're going to try to destroy everyone emotionally every season. That's just on the table. There's no mystery in that. And so I think, especially for this fantasy suites, not only is there no mystery going in, the way they presented it in the document, by having one player do a fantasy suite, then a next, and then two fantasy suites there, and then the other player.
And then a trailer for the other fantasy suites Rachel Recchia had already done in the middle of the episode to remind us.
You're trying to build up a certain narrative dramatic structure with the fantasy suites, which is usually like a pretty good fantasy suite. And then the next person is having some kind of misgivings about the process. And, oh, that's going to be the wall they have to overcome. And then maybe the third player is like, I'm definitely not down with you having sex with two other people. And so you're building in this arc that just doesn't exist with two leads in the way they presented it. Because it's like, you've got your Gabby Windy arc building. And then it's like, forget about that. Here's Rachel Recchia now. Okay, let's build her arc. Okay, now let's go back to Gabby's third date. And now let's cut that into two episodes. And now we're going to have to give you a literal fucking recap reel of Rachel Recchia's first fantasy suites because you don't fucking remember them. I mean, it's just a disaster.
Yeah, I think that you're right. I think that the narrative flow wasn't there. And I don't think they figured out how to tell that story cohesively at all. And I do think they could have helped themselves by featuring Gabby and Rachel's relationship in a more organic way more often. Like having maybe the two of them living together while they're going on these fantasy suites and coming back and being like, I don't know what to do. Like, you could have tied these two arcs together and shown us that they're happening in the same world. As far as we're concerned, they exist on two planes.
I'm really craving that Jade and Carly moment where you're like, this was the love story all along. And I'm having that cathartic moment where they come together as two friends who are supporting each other in this nightmare that they live in. And instead, they're just like brought together for this very sterile meeting. And then they don't speak again.
They want to separate them so that they're alone and they endure the most trauma and have no support.
But then that's so transparent. Like, good production means that we're not going to see every single machination of it. And instead, like, all I see is the production.
And they're in the House of Mirrors and they're being pursued. And
yes. And I think that's where we're at in the vacuum. When Elon Gale, he left after season 23, in that vacuum of power, in this power struggle, you've just got people who all they think, I mean, this is at least what's coming through the document to me when I'm watching it. The current producer class, the only thing they're concerned with is tears and destroying people. And it's like, that's not what we're watching this show for. It never has been. This is escapism. We want to identify with the main character. We want to see them going on a fantastical journey that ends happily ever after. That's a basic component of all stories, you know? And they're not giving that to us ever. The journey is not happy. The ending is not happy. But I will say, there are things about this season that I think are incredibly valuable. We will get to some of them later because it is highly experimental. But let's move on and talk about, what did you think about the constant shitting on Clayton Eckard through the entire season? And do you think that Rachel Recchia has avoided doing his exact same behaviors or not, as she was fearful of doing?
I mean, the Clayton slander is getting to be a bit much. I think that we were talking about this a little bit this week, that like one thing that they've started doing in their cycle is turning their lead into a villain and a scapegoat. And instead of their heartbroken but understanding, you know, runner up becoming the lead and growing to a deeper understanding of the person who dumped them by going through the process themselves as the lead. Instead, it's like, well, I could never do this horrible thing that the lead did to me. And then they find themselves in a position where they're like, well, but how do I not do it at all? Like, I have to do it kind of a little bit, but like not the way he did it. But like, it's actually in the moment very slippery and harder than I expected to tell where the line is. Like, I don't think that Rachel has done the same thing as Clayton. She hasn't said, I'm in love with you, to more than one person. But she, by going through the format of the show, is doing things that are so similar to that, right? Well, she's making all the men feel like she's falling. Yeah, she's saying, I'm falling in love with you, to multiple people. She's making men feel like they're special and that she might choose them. That is what the show is. And it's very hard to like sit there on your high horse and be like, I would never do what Clayton did, but I am going to do something that feels really similar to those guys. And
with
not have that blow up in your face in the end, which it seems like it's about to with Zach.
With Shawcross, I don't know. I'm curious to see what that play is. But I agree with you. And I think in 26, in Eckard's season, is where we saw for the very first time the producers going against the premise of the show, going against the process, where they basically have said, yes, you have to explore all these relationships. That's what this show is. And you're going to fall in love with multiple people, maybe, and you can have sex with multiple people. That's what this show is. But then they vilified him for doing it. To me, that was when, like, really I understood, like, oh, this current producer class does not understand the product they're making. They don't fucking get it.
We want the lead to be someone who is amazing, the most eligible person of whatever gender it is. And they're not doing that. They're being like, oh, this person is shitty. Oh, the last Bachelor was shitty. Like, it reflects on them when they do this.
Yeah. They're like, your boyfriend lives in a van down by the river. Dump him and date whatever fucking creep we're about to make believe. It's like,
who probably also literally lives in a fucking van by the river. Like,
did your boyfriend do blackface in high school?
Oh, God.
Come to abccasting.com and we'll set you up with another one.
What? What were your expectations going into the season for the double lead? How have those expectations been fulfilled or not fulfilled?
I mean, I knew they would fuck it up in some way. I wouldn't say my expectations were like super high, but I did actually think they were going to lean in more to the fun that can come from having two leads who genuinely like each other, even if they're not actually best friends. Obviously, mm-hmm. they're manufacturing that storyline. Like, just having two friends of any kind who are there to support each other, I was like, that can actually add some levity to a show that's become such a fucking bummer. And instead, they seem to like take that note, reassure everyone publicly, like, we won't be pitting them against each other, and then turned around and just were like, we're just gonna try, just completely isolate them and pretend we're like making two shows, but then be like, they're best friends. Like, it doesn't make sense. I don't feel like they thought it through properly. And I don't feel like
they didn't think it through at all. They didn't have a plan.
I mean, Jesse's out here every turn being like, I don't know what's happening. I'm only hired by this show. Who knows? Mm-hmm.
He's innocent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How dare you? I always am like struck by every time you see them together, they're always holding hands. And in my mind, I'm just imagining the producer right before they walk into wherever they're being shot, like they're about to walk in and the producer's like, hold on, hands. And they like make them hold hands to walk in.
You guys covered F-Boy Island, which for me was like, have the format right there. Those three women don't even know each other. But there is fun in them getting to know each other. We have them looking at a board and discussing all the people.
Right.
I just think they handled that element of it way better.
I would have loved to see the process whereby the women separated the groups for the rose ceremony. And also, that actually, once they've separated their groups, that actually seems like an even better time to start having group dates, because you can focus on the guys who are there for you without trying to suss out like who's actually flirting with my competitor right now. And they separated them at that point.
And you can also like keep an eye on your friends, guys. Like, that is part of the fun. They just took all of the elements of fun and all of the extras that we felt like we were going to get from having two leads and just like did away with them. It's so bizarre.
They should be sharing suites. They should be like, yes, hanging out in their PJs, being like, oh my God, that one-on-one today really did not go the way I expected.
Or like, this guy really pissed me off and like is making me feel like XYZ. Like, what should I do? Like, I need more of this.
And instead it's like, I have to talk to Gabby. I'm going to walk across the entire cruise ship to the opposite side where they've stowed her away for a special conversation,
so that I can talk at her for 10 minutes straight.
Yeah.
In a scripted manner.
Yeah. Reading scripts. I mean, like you're saying, I think it would have been fascinating to see them splitting their guys into different groups. The only problem is they didn't make those decisions. That's all producers. Like, Gabby and Rachel say, I like these two or three guys. And then the producers do everything else. Yeah. All of the rest of the show, and this is the way it's been for a very long time, is just acting. The lead is acting interested in Meatball, for example. I had to let Meatball back in, of course.
How dare you?
You know, that's, the producers are forcing all of this.
No, it's pretty clear that Rachel is not actually interested in Meatball.
Yeah, exactly.
She was like, I don't want to have fewer guys than Gabby, so sure. Add him back onto my team.
Yes, it's just about math and the producers trying to figure out how we're going to make all this fucking work and how many guys does she need versus her.
That was a complete disaster. I totally blame production for that rose ceremony. I do think that they would never have shown the whole process, but I think that you could have let us behind the scenes, much like they did with the board in F-Boy Island. Mm-hmm. We didn't see their whole process of sorting the F-Boys, but you get to see some clips of them discussing their contenders and discussing like who they're sus about, and we could have just gotten a little taste of that, and then, you know, production would have done everything else, I'm sure.
But I think there's something about The Bachelor specifically in the I mean, now we have however many dating shows have spawned because of The Bachelor, some version of them, F-Boy Island being one of them, produced by Elan Gale, created by him. You have this thing in The Bachelor that's like, they never let you beyond a certain line. it always has to be the lie of these people are just dating. They're just falling in love. It's only about that. So I think even if you were let behind the curtain, like producers would never allow it.
They could have brought back the deliberation room from the early seasons where they looked at the framed photographs of everyone.
You mean the funeral parlor?
Oh my God, I've never heard it referred to it like that. That's so funny. Oh my God. I don't know when they got rid of it, but I think they should have brought it back for this season.
But I do totally agree with you guys that like they had this unique opportunity with two leads. I think they completely fumbled it. There's so much that they could have done that could have been interesting, or at least like take a chance, take a swing on something cool. They didn't. They tried to lock it down and have complete control over everything, just like they always fucking do. Mm-hmm. And it sucked the life out of this season. It just smothered it.
Yeah, I think they are doing themselves a disservice. They are not allowing their product to have any breathing room. And that's where the interesting stuff is going to happen. And instead, we're just seeing this like intense formulaic thing play out season after season. And then a dose of like very intensely crafted emotional trauma. And you end the season and you just feel icky every fucking time. Like, that's not why I started watching.
Yeah, we were all super fans. You know, we've been watching for years. We love the show. I do think what you're saying about the breathing room is right, that you have to let things play out. You have to let people perform steals as opposed to like scripting the order that everyone, like that night one when they just had those three quick pops. I was like, okay, so they scripted this. You have to talk to the twins now. Now the magician. It feels just so unnatural. Yeah.
And they're not giving us the full format. They're cutting rose ceremonies out. They're cutting day portions of group dates out. We don't actually get to see the formula that we like is the game.
Right.
It's these 30 players come in. They get eliminated in a game of attrition through a series of group dates, one-on-ones that have various roses awarded, safety roses, if you will. And we don't get to see much of that now. In service of what? In service of Billy Eichner getting two segments of a Mentel All to do a fucking commercial for his movie. You know, that type of shit is like, I don't know what's going on financially with The Bachelor, but if they really need money that bad that they're selling out a quarter of the fucking programming time, like that is not a good sign, in my opinion.
Oh, it's so bad.
Yeah.
We have time for Jesse to just stand on a broken down soundstage for five whole minutes.
That's because he has to inform us about a national emergency that I'm very concerned about will be happening next week. I mean, I think I've always said that like the show, people will sometimes complain about episodes being boring or having too much filler. I think that filler is part of the pacing of a story. Like sometimes your brain needs time to like follow the tropes a little bit, absorb what's happening, process, fill out the little bits of the picture. And instead, what we're getting is this overwhelming, like frenetic pace of drama and like kabooms and like mess. And then instead of just normal filler that fits into the show and allows your brain to kind of take its bearings, we get the fucking filler that's like, here's 20 minutes of sponsored content at the Mentel All. And it's like, well, that's not part of the narrative. It's just wasted time. And then the rest of the time, my brain is working overtime to try to figure out like this absolute like avalanche of dramatic information about what's happening with these two like love stories. It's so exhausting to watch.
I mean, follow the friendships, you know, follow JoJo Fletcher and Becca Tilly, like
I miss
working
that.
Out with wine glasses together, like mansion free play antics, like. There's none of that. We don't feel like we know any of the men. Yeah.
So we've explored why this season is bad. Now let's explore what are some good things that happened in this season. I think personally, it was obviously historic. First time two leads in America has ever happened. We also saw the first time somebody got COVID, maybe. In this season.
I like that you're including that in the good things.
You're like, that was a great moment.
Yeah, it was. It was like a very important moment because COVID has been around for a long time in our beloved game. It derailed production for 6 months going into Bachelor at 16 Claire Crawley season that led to the fucking Dale Moss effect where he came in and crashed the fucking season after parasocial relationship developed. you know, we saw very important things because of COVID. Now we're seeing how they handle it when someone gets COVID, which is basically they disappear that person.
They disappear them. Yeah.
I mean, other than how they handled Logan's COVID, there are things that are, I do, at this point, I think he did. I thought maybe he didn't, but now I've heard him on different podcasts and stuff. I think, like, he probably did.
Yeah, from everything I've heard, I think he just did have COVID.
No matter how unbelievable that is, though, because no one else got COVID.
Why was that convo so weird?
I know. It was just strangely presented. But even beyond that, we started to see some things in this season of, you know, splitting the roses up, splitting up the teams of guys. How do you handle giving half the screen time to somebody? Do you think there was anything, any lessons that were learned by the producers in this season that will carry forward into future seasons?
Gosh, I hope not. I mean, the COVID thing was interesting because I thought that was actually handled so poorly that it, because it kind of puts the lie to the whole premise of the show, which is like, well, we decided he was here for the narrative and then he got COVID. So it was inconvenient for him to be here. And so he's gone. And if Gabby like was really interested in potentially marrying him, then why is he just gone with no explanation just because he got like a virus? Like it does seem to expose kind of the fakeness of everything that's happening. And I was like surprised that they didn't put more effort into papering
massaging the narrative a little bit.
Well, he can't play the game anymore. Like, he's sick. So we sent him back to the hotel.
Clues. Underwear drawers, they're not organized. They're like the Wild West, the final frontier of wardrobes. Mm. And there's no rhyme or reason to them. You got ones that are super old, different brands, etc. You don't know what to expect. But now I have felt the buttery soft comfort of MeUndies. And now I want to replace the whole drawer with MeUndies because those are my now go-to. I'm currently wearing their long sleeve shirt and my which is not what this ad is about, but I am also wearing the super soft, sustainable modal fabric thong with no rollback waistband. You want that. You don't want it to be rolling. You don't want it to be showing. And I'm hooked. I don't want to wear anything else. It's all got to go now.
Well, this ad actually is kind of about that, Pace Case. Everybody knows MeUndies makes great underwear. It's in the name, MeUndies. But it's not just about underwear. You can explore the lounge collection featuring comfy joggers, hoodies, onesies, and a whole bunch more. And their Move Me activewear collection is the softest activewear on the market. There's no doubt about it. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/roses. That's MeUndies.com/roses for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies. Comfort from the outside in. Support for today's episode comes from OneSkin. If you have sensitive skin, you're going to want to hear about OneSkin's scientifically proven topical supplements. This is face, eye, body, shield, and it can all be used with any of their other products, which are free from over 1,500 chemicals and preservatives that can make skin red, irritated, or itchy. Their products are safe for sensitive skin. It's just one of the reasons they've earned the Skin Safe seal of approval.
You got to keep that skin glowing if you want to be keeping up the level of face play that I've got going on. And OneSkin was founded by an all-woman team of scientists. Their products are backed by extensive lab and clinical data to validate their efficacy and safety on all skin types. Their topical supplements are the easiest way to keep your skin healthy and hydrated without the harsh ingredients or irritation found in other skincare products often. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code ROSES at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co. with code ROSES. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support Gore and tell them that we sent you.
Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well,
Unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered shower head comes in.
Known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, Canopy is dermatologist recommended. This unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water. Best of all, the Canopy filtered shower head is hassle-free, installation's a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement. Go to canopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered shower head purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, Gore listeners can use our code ROSES at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
I mean, in terms of how they've split up the groups, I just wasn't really a fan of how they handled the whole thing. I think that, like, there was no thought put into, like, how will the men kind of have an opportunity to indicate to the women which one they're kind of choosing to pursue. How will they work with those two groups once they have kind of chosen sides? Or was the idea to perhaps let them date both women to the end? It seems unlikely. I would hope if they did it again, they would come up with more of a template.
Yeah. Plan a week. Like, this is your all eggs, one basket week. You have these 2 weeks to pick, and then everyone is aware of it, and everyone can start to plan their all eggs, one basket strategies. I feel like that so much of the early season was just people shitting on the Bachelorettes, being like, well, I'm actually into Gabby. Well, I'm actually into Rachel. And it's like, just trying to make them have emotional trauma even earlier in the season.
Right. That seemed to be the only thing that they did with that. And it feels like they could have come up with some more creative ways to play around with having two groups of people or two love stories going on at the same time. Like, personally, I'm a fan of having multiple narratives or having two different kind of like archetypes of romantic leads that you can, that the audience can connect to. Like, I think that in theory could actually be really fun. You know, it's something that I like about Paradise is that there are different threads to follow, but you have to do that well. You have to tell the two stories skillfully. And I feel like they didn't do that at all.
One thing I would love for them to do more is the double date format, like the one they had in Paris, where they started and ended the date together.
Loved that.
And so you did get to see, I mean, we have the group dates, but how often do you see people on in a double date format on this franchise, which is actually a way that you might date in the real world? And it brings out a very like natural human interaction style that was really fun to watch.
And also a way to just, get more personality from the people who are featured on the date and see the way they interact with other people who aren't just the person they're in this one very specific romantic power dynamic with. Like, again, I think that they need to look for the levity within the game and that they have completely lost sight of. And I think that there was a lot of potential and is future potential if they decide to do two leads again to find that within this kind of format, but they just like really dropped the ball.
They will never do two leads again. That's a guarantee.
I do think that the two leads kind of hurts the format because you're automatically pitting them against each other. Neither of them seemed very special or seemed to have that much power. And like, that's one of the nice things about Bachelorette. Is like, oh, now the woman has power and she gets to pick.
Well, I want to see them do it with two men because I think it would have been more satisfying to see the power of two men undermined.
Yes. I like what you're saying about differentiating them and not like one is worse or one is better, but like Rachel Recchio, they could have positioned her as the one who's like really sincere and looking for that overly romantic love story and really hit that. And Gabby is looking for someone more lighthearted and fun as a best friend partner.
She's a little older. She has a different idea of what she wants from a partner. Like they could have used it. They could have used these things to their advantage. And instead they were just like, how do we do the exact thing we've always done?
Yes.
But two.
I think they were really nervous about, because we've all seen the Caitlin Bristow premiere and there was so much Madonna horror going on in the way that they differentiated them. They're like, one of them is sexy and fun and the other one is sweet and wants to get married. And there was pushback about that. And certainly now the discourse has turned against that. But in the end, they just wanted to be like, look at these two women. They're both perfect, but different in ways that we aren't going to get into too much. They're different and both uniquely perfect. And that was better than pitting them so obviously against each other, but not very compelling.
It was better than what they did with Caitlin and Britt. Yeah, because that was like beyond terrible.
I feel like we got a Caitlin Britt bad episode. I feel like we had that for the first like four episodes of this season. I felt the same way.
It was like less severe.
Oh my God. Have you rewatched that episode recently?
No,
it is
I
absolutely
haven't.
Shocking.
Yeah, we rewatched it just before and it was like,
whoa, it was
truly alarming.
Oh, God.
So in this presentation of the two leads as separate but equally perfect leads, do you believe that still is happening as we now just get news today that Gabby Windey is going to be appearing on Disney-owned ABC streamed Dancing with the Stars, along with a whole slew of other guest celebrities? We've got Real Housewives of New Jersey, Teresa Giudice. We got Wayne Brady, Selma Blair, Arnold Schwarzenegger's son. We got Jersey Shore people, all kinds of people, including Charli D'Amelio is going to be on it this season. So Gabby Windey gets that gift from ABC Disney. Rachel Recchia does not. I don't know if they offered it to her and she said no, or if it was never offered. I don't know. But we now see clear favoritism from the company that is part of producing the show for Gabby Windey. So is it really an equal presentation?
I mean, yeah, that's a good question. I would say that Gabby definitely seems more like she's in a position to go on Dancing with the Stars because she is already like a professional dancer. And Rachel is supposed to be very focused on her career of being a pilot. And perhaps that was their opportunity to kind of differentiate between them. I'm not sure if Rachel would have wanted to do it. But at the same time, that's historically been an issue, right? That they don't offer it to every lead. And Caitlin Bristow for many years was furious that she was not invited to be on Dancing with the Stars. So it certainly is a gift that they gave to only Gabby. I suppose they didn't want to have them both, but couldn't they? I mean, there's usually only one bachelorette.
Yeah, there's 100 people on that show.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Have two bachelorettes on it. No one gives a shit. It would have been fine.
I do think they saw the way that the audience responded to Gabby. And I think that they felt like perhaps she was the more
she has the most Instagram followers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This all was just an extended audition for who was going to get to fill out the Dancing with the Stars cast.
I mean, that's a better gig than Bachelor.
Could Jason Lewis not have been dropped for Rachel Recchia? Probably. You know what I mean?
I would have loved to see them both.
Absolutely. I think we all would. But let's talk about now the next element of this, which is social media. Social media is tanking across the board for all of these players. You've only got two players above 50K in Eric Schwer and Nate Mitchell. And then if we look at the leads, by this point, in at least kind of recently traditional seasons, your lead is like closing in on a million, if not already crossed it. Here now, we've got Gabby Windey at 753K and Rachel Recchia is not even at 500K yet, 459K. So I don't think she's got a chance at hitting a million. Gabby Windey might after Dancing with the Stars if she has a good performance there. What do you guys attribute this, I don't even know what to call it, this slump in social media, at least where Instagram is concerned?
I mean, I think part of it is just that Instagram is getting to be like the older people's platform and it's not as popular. And a lot of the audience is starting to split between TikTok and Instagram and people are moving their talents over to TikTok predominantly, especially the younger players. Mm-hmm. So I do think that part of that is just on Instagram. Like,
I agree with you. I think Instagram is starting to wane a little bit, But even the TikTok numbers are abysmal for all these players as well.
Well, I also just think that there are more reality dating offerings now that are reaching a wider range of people and potentially appealing to a wider range of people. Like, we obviously saw that the Love is Blind cast members tend to still do significantly better on Instagram than Bachelor now. And they have international reach, like, as part of Netflix. And also, I think it just feels fresher. Some of these newer shows do feel,
What do you mean? Bachelor is a fresh baby.
What could be more fresh than a hetero Christian marriage show?
And there's so much Bachelor. We are just getting flooded with new Bachelor contestants every year. Like, it's constantly on the air now. And this whole season, you know, we had two bachelorettes like competing for that attention in the public's eye. I do think that when there's just one person you're really interested in, rather than two people that you're sort of interested in, you're more likely to follow. The cast of Love is Blind is not that big. There are a few standout people. You go ahead and follow them. I also think that like the what leads to success on The Bachelor is more compatible with the kind of old school Instagram influencer than TikTok. And the newer dating shows are capturing that TikTok sort of aesthetic and energy better, which is like not so sincere, looking perfect, aspirational in this very kind of old fashioned conservative way. I want her life. I want babies as cute as her babies. It's this person is funny and quippy and irreverent and wears bikini tops tied in all kinds of confusing ways. Like, that's TikTok. That's too hot to handle. That's not The Bachelor.
But I think it's interesting because, like, Maddie Pruitt, for example, we see she's killing it on TikTok. And that's because she has tapped into like televangelist TikTok. So I do think there is like this niche of evangelical Christian social media that you could still launch yourself from The Bachelor right into.
Oh, totally. But she also has now a billion dollars behind her. I mean, we've talked about this on our show at length.
But she was already the TikTok leader before she ever even met Tracy.
That 2 million TikTok, if not, maybe she's even surpassed that. But I mean, I think she is going to be the most significant player who's ever come out of The Bachelor. Once she gets infused with the $1 billion to start her ministry, she's going to become
young Tammy Faye.
Way bigger than Tammy Faye. She's going to be like Oprah and Joel Osteen rolled into one person.
It's terrifying.
Gen Z.
It's truly terrifying.
She's going to control most media on planet Earth, I think, within 10 years.
I think also everyone had half the screen time, basically.
Yeah, so I think that's part of it, too.
Fewer followers. I think Gabby and Rachel took from each other's followers. Either of them, I think, would be higher if they were the single lead. But Bachelor Nation needs to adapt to TikTok, I think. And, you know, make it more appealing for people to go on the show. There's nothing that appealing if you're only getting sub 50K and all of your high school yearbooks will be made public. Like, people comb through that shit more than I think they don't do that on Love is Blind or that their fan base is.
F-Boy Island. Like, if you tried to be like an F-Boy on F-Boy Island, like cheated on someone, like who would care?
Yeah, no one's interested. I was listening to Nate Olukoya on the Vile Files earlier, and he was talking about how he got talked into going on the show, and like his mom and his stepdad, like his friends, everyone's like, well, what's the worst that could happen? And I was like, Nate, look it up. A lot of bad shit can happen. Totally. And like, what's the best that can happen? Like, maybe you have a larger platform, you're a more successful influencer, but like, there's actually a huge downside in terms of your mental health and your reputation to consider.
Yeah.
I think people are starting to consider that.
Yes, I agree with what you're saying, Lizzie. Everybody got half the screen time, so it's going to be harder to accrue a big social media following. But if you're a good fucking player, you can do it. Plenty of people have done it in the past few seasons. You see a bunch of million follower counts coming out with, you know, Katie Thurston on. There were a bunch of people who still did it because they're good at fucking social media. And that is what all reality TV is. It is an opportunity to grow your social media, whether it's Bachelor or F-Boy Island, whatever you want to talk about. Like, I think that we're seeing not only a degradation of the producer tier, but of the players. This crop of players is fucking not strong, in my opinion.
I think they should cast more people like Katie Thurston. I mean, she is good at TikTok. She is good at social media and staying in the, she's in the news every week because she hasn't been on the show for seasons.
For my mental health, I need them to not cast more people like Katie Thurston.
It's coming. I mean, there's something like the Bachelor has always had, which is this aversion to social media. They see it as a competitive kind of arena with what they're trying to do, a loss of control where the players are now being able to make money outside the control of the producers. They have to forget about this. They have fully fucking embrace it. And they need people. You want people coming into your show who have a million TikTok followers. You don't want people coming in that have like 1,000. And I know that there's this idea that if you have social media, you're for TWR for the wrong reasons. That is not the fucking case. Social media is how we all live. It is the primary way we communicate. You want people who have massive followings already coming in.
Right. This isn't 2012. Yeah. Like, it's just, this isn't, they're late to the game at this point.
If there's someone who can leverage this platform into a million followers, then they probably have already found a way to leverage their hotness into at least a moderate following.
I would have, at this point, if I was a casting producer or if I'm anybody making the decision about who's getting on this show, you have to have 100K on some social media platform before we even look at you.
But how did they convince those people that to go on the show then? They only have things to risk.
No, if you got 100K, you don't want a million. Yes, you do. And this will give it to you if you are good at the game.
There are so many ways to fuck it up.
It's just so counter to the Bachelor brand, which is like, these are just regular, but also the best regular person you've ever, the hottest, nicest regular person you've ever met. Who's just like, who, me on national television? But yes, I would be the best husband ever. And so for them to already have a bunch of social media followers just isn't compatible with their brand. I feel like that would be like a huge pivot for them in terms of what they're selling.
And it's one they need to make. I think they have to, because that the old brand is dead. No one gives a fuck. That's what we're seeing in all this, you know?
I think, though, that they haven't figured out a way to make that shift and still figure out, like, what would be consistent about their product.
And, like, what would set it apart from all of the fun new shows?
Right. What would set it apart from anything else? Like, this is a marriage show.
It's not. It's a game.
I agree, in part, but I think that what they are promoting is very tied up with the idea that, like, the prize, presumably, even though we know that is not the actual case, is this vision of heterosexual marriage. And I think it's really hard for them to step away from that. And it would require more creativity than I think we've seen in the production of the show.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Okay, you hire only evangelical Christians who are waiting till marriage for sex.
I mean, that was what they were doing for a while.
No, it's true. Let's move on. I'm curious to know what you guys think about the official Bachelor Nation podcasts and the era that we're in, which Lizzie and I have dubbed the Sauce Wars, because we know Grocery Store Joe sells his tomato sauce, and to us, that has become a metaphor for the lies of the show that get perpetuated and reinforced through the official Bachelor Nation podcast owned by Warner Brothers. We're talking about Happy Hour. We're talking about Clickbait. We're talking about Talking Doubt. All those podcasts get marching orders from the producers. So when they have somebody gets kicked off the show and they come into the show, whatever the lie about that person is and why they got kicked off, that is upheld through the show. But every once in a while, you get these little cracks where Grocery Store Joe will say something and you're like, oh, this motherfucker's spilling some tea now. They like can't help themselves almost to let us see through the veneer of the show is only about finding love and all of this is real. So I'm curious where your heads are at with the contemporary state of just the Bachelor Nation podcast world. You guys have a very successful one. You're commenting weekly on everything that's going on in this world. You have tabs on it. What do you think about what we see as the growing division between podcasts that try to reveal the truth, like ours, like yours, and these Bachelor Nation podcasts that bury the fucking truth under tons of sauce?
I think they are fundamentally different products. Like, you're just going, your commentary cannot be the same when your product is owned by the company that produces the show you're commenting on. Like, that's not going to be the same kind of commentary and analysis as a show that is not at all beholden to those like powers. So it's just, I understand though, like it makes sense to me why Warner Brothers would see this ecosystem doing so well and say like, we want to cash in on that. Like it's an, they, as you have said throughout this whole chat, like their number one goal is to control the narrative and to control all of the players. And this is just another way that they can do that.
They only can be guests on certain shows, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Exactly. Like they used to have to rely at least in part on independent media sources to kind of get press for the people that were coming off the show. And now they can funnel them straight to properties that they own.
Yeah. They saw this whole ecosystem spring up of fandom driven podcasts and blogs and social media accounts. And they saw that that kept people engaged and thinking about their product all year, all the time, every day of the week. And they were like, but this would be so much better if they never said anything we didn't like. And so what if we just launched like three or four of our own? And it's smart, it's vertical integration, but personally, I think this makes me like a bad Bachelor podcaster. I don't listen to any of the ABC podcasts. Like,
I don't either.
I don't listen to any Bachelor podcast because I don't want to
taint. Yeah.
It's also just like too much.
I mean, honestly, I find them really boring. Like they don't have anything counter narrative or interesting to say.
Right. If the narrative's being controlled, then like, what are you really like? Occasionally, yes, you will get a nugget that is interesting or revealing in some capacity. It's also like the hosts are not professional interviewers.
How dare you? Grocery Store Joe has been doing interviews now for a few years and he's gotten very good. No, look, I agree with you on all these things, obviously, but for me, those podcasts are very similar to watching the show. It's like, this is the official document that Warner Brothers is putting forth. And yes, it's very polished and it's hard to see the truth behind it, but you can see it. If you look close enough, you can see it.
You listen on 0.5 speed, you'll hear the truth.
It's in the background.
Listen to every little micro nuance. But no, I mean, for me, it's like an interesting piece of it. I don't consider the podcast to be separate from the show at all, really. They're just these weird extensions of it.
I'm just resentful. It's like kicking the rose ceremony to digital. It's like, now I've already spent 4 hours this week
right.
watching the show. Yeah. Now I have to go to abc.com and see if you have this clip there. And then I have to go listen to like 7 hours of podcasts where you reinforce the same line. And like, how much of my week are you going to colonize? Like, I got to do other stuff at some point.
As much as possible.
They want me to never stop consuming the show.
Yeah. This is like the fandom of any other sport. I mean, ESPN runs 24 hours a day with new news about all the sports that are out there. And there's a million podcasts and there's a million websites. The Bachelor is no different. It's just like one of those to me. But I do think that we are getting to a point where there are more and more podcasts like ours, collectively, yeah. I mean, that are talking about the truth behind it and shit. I don't think the official podcasts are going to be able to hold up under the weight of it eventually.
No, I mean, when they're really blatantly going against what most people in the audience and the independent media sphere are seeing and reacting to, they just, I mean, there's
it's hollow.
It's hollow, yeah. and it's not convincing. No one is being won over by a grocery store Joe, you know, trying to convince us of something that we all saw with our own eyes, like isn't really what happened. And it does, I do think it damages their credibility, like even to people who aren't maybe thinking too hard about like, oh, this is an official product. It's like, he's asking me to kind of believe something that's obviously ridiculous.
Come on. So. This show's about falling in love. Nothing else. You come in, you be open, you fall in love. And then maybe you get a Maybelline commercial with your fiance Serena.
Get ready for a little revolve. Tickling, baby.
Oh my God.
He said on the last one, I love his accent.
Oh, Joe is like the ultimate guy who wrote the impression that he was too normal to care about having a social media platform into Bachelor fame and glory.
Into a million Instagram followers. Yeah.
He is like the ultimate Bachelor contestant.
He's the greatest night one player in history.
He's the success story that every player looks to.
But he got that by everyone looking at him and being like, he's just a regular guy who works at a grocery store. He doesn't care about clout. Let's give him lots of clout.
But he got that because of social media. It was social media that gave birth to him. He was a night one guy. And then Twitter was like, oh my God, he's so good looking or whatever. And immediately he was like, back to the Mental All. He was the star of the Mental All. Then he's on Paradise. Now he's an official Bachelor Nation podcast host. He's selling his sauce. I mean, that guy, in my opinion, has done basically an impossible run through our game. No collateral damage. Nothing bad about him ever because he wasn't in the game at all.
I also am amazed when I look at, you know, Bachelor Nation. Sure, the ratings are going down. The social media followings are going down. But all of the top TV and film podcasts are always Bachelor podcasts. Like, the fandom is so intense for this show in a way that you don't see 100 podcasts about Love is Blind. Maybe there are, but certainly not as many.
It's the NFL of the dating genre, right? In my opinion. Like, there will always be other little ones here and there, and they may even have some people popping off on social media in a bigger way. But like, I don't think The Bachelor's ever going away. And so when we talk about how the show has gotten to a point where it's hard to watch and it's not as fun as it used to be, we're just in a dark period of it. It will rise again. It will find its way. They're going to get new producers in there. Well, I mean, it's what happens in all sports. You go through these eras where it's like the teams are all kind of shitty, and like the superstar players' numbers are way lower than superstar players' numbers of like 5 years ago. But then you get like Michael Jordan comes into basketball and it's like, oh my God, this is a new game. Here's a player who's redefining what this shit even is. We will start, and that's like Madison Pruitt.
We need our steroids era.
We need our steroids era. Figure it out. I don't know what that is, how that exactly equates, but.
Or they'll like change a rule. Like, you can like take like 7 steps mm-hmm. before your layup now or something. And they're like, that really opens things up.
They've
for
never
us.
Had that rule in basketball, but yes, I get what you're saying.
They
amazing.
Take more than they used to, I'm telling you.
This season, no dribbling.
Who would be both of your ideal next Bachelor?
Oh God, I always hate picking Bachelors. The options are so grim.
Out of anyone in the world,
Leonardo DiCaprio is single.
Oh, Leonardo DiCaprio. Leo. Oh, does not need to be dating anyone right now. He needs to be in therapy.
You make all the players 25 and older.
I mean, I would support it if it was like exclusively a 35 plus season.
Yeah.
With Leo yes. as the lead.
He just walks yeah. out on night one. He's self-eliminated.
Yeah. He'd be like, I'm done.
We find out this is actually the senior bachelor. It's finally happening. We did it for you, Leo. Actually, yeah, I would definitely watch that.
I would be down. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Do you have a dream bachelorette then?
Honestly, Gabby was my pick, and I would wish more space for a full Gabby season, but
I felt robbed of a full Gabby season as well.
Like, her energy is what I crave. Again, I just want someone to be funny.
Yeah, her rolling on the floor with that dog.
I just love her.
Would you watch a Gabby Wendy season right now? Let's say they make her bachelor next. Would you watch that season?
No.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, yes, because this is my job.
Yeah.
No, it's too late. They gave her the half season. I wish that she had a full season. Not that I don't think Rachel is lovely, but it is true. They're sharing time. Like, if your pick is Gabby, on some level, you've got to be wishing for Gabby to have a whole season to herself. I have to say, like, because of how these seasons always go, it's hard for me to ever wish anyone into that role anymore.
I know. Mm-hmm. It's such like a point of trauma.
It's hard to get enthusiastic about someone because they always turn out to be like a Nazi or they're not a Nazi, but like they go through intense emotional pain yeah. and you're like, I don't want to see this nice person go through this. So I now almost like see the reveal like through my fingers. I'm like, who are they going to do this to?
Yeah, I'm like terrified. I'm like, who's going to get destroyed?
So yeah, I guess Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah.
They're either a Nazi or if not a Nazi, they've liked a bunch of Nazi posts.
Yeah, which is totally different and like not a big deal at all.
Less severe Nazi. But what do you guys, let me throw out one name for you. Peter Krause.
I mean, I did really want Peter Krause at the time.
I've moved on, I think.
I've moved on from mm-hmm. him too. Like, I don't think about him anymore. I'm like,
Yeah, I never think about Peter.
Okay.
He was pretty.
Do you think about Peter?
I think it's going to be Peter Krause. I've been predicting this for months.
He's been thinking about Peter a lot.
Really? I mean,
there are two moves with The Bachelor lately have been deep into the past. From the future, almost, with Matt James. From a future cast.
From the future.
Because he was supposed to be on a season that hadn't taped yet. Or just, like, some forgettable guy. So Peter would fit with their pattern of going back into the past. We haven't had one since Ari, I guess. It's time.
Yeah.
I would say Tyler Cameron would definitely get a lot more enthusiasm. I don't see why he would do it. At this point, he's doing well for himself.
Yeah, I don't think he needs to, but
he's good at staying in the news cycle.
But what if they pay him that Billy Eichner money?
I mean, if they pay him a lot.
They're fundraising for Tyler by selling selling their segments.
That's the true backstory of that commercial. We have to pay Tyler.
Fake sale for Tyler. I don't know. The way that like someone like Tyler is very good at staying in the news cycle shows that he's, I think, very good at the game we've been discussing, but
it doesn't make him appealing to me personally.
On the note of like the most appealing bachelor, the most desirable bachelor, it actually kind of works against that. I'm like, Tyler, control yourself.
I'm just like seeing too much of him. We read his book.
Yeah.
That didn't make me want to hear more from him, to be honest.
Wow. That's deep in it.
His book was anti-advertising for his personal brand.
It truly was. Like, he needed a much better ghostwriter.
How dare you?
I don't know.
He's a novelist.
We cannot thank you both for joining us enough to have this very important conversation about the state of where our game is and what is going on with everything and what we're looking forward to. Paradise is coming up. Do you guys have any thoughts on that? Are you looking forward to anything, any specific players?
I am actually looking forward to Johnny's arc and him just, I suspect, revisiting whether he's ready for an engagement.
Interesting. Honestly, when I think about Paradise, my head just like fills with buzzing. Like, that's kind of where I'm at with this show right now.
Blacks out. She's like, oh no.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now. I do feel like overwhelmed by how many seasons and contestants there are lately, but I guess I am curious to see if any of the villains from this past couple seasons get a big redemption arc. Like, can Hayden be saved?
No.
I don't think so.
Logan, maybe.
Because
he wasn't even quite a villain.
It looks like they're trying to save Logan.
Yeah, I could see it with Logan.
I'd throw Logan a life raft. Hayden, I'm going to leave in the Gulf.
Exactly.
I'm always curious, more curious almost for the redemption arcs than for the actual engagements.
You want a Shanae engagement.
Oh, no. Shanae is a big one. Is Shanae going to get a redemption arc?
I'm actually very curious to see what they do with Shanae. I'm terrified for Lace Morris. I'm very nervous. I suspect it's going to be very painful.
I do too. I don't think she understands the modern game. But yeah, maybe she will. Maybe she'll get in there and be like, no, let me show you how it's really done.
We'll see.
I don't know what's going to happen, but I have a sneaking feeling that...
More tattoo play.
Yeah, she's going to get another tattoo.
We haven't had that in a while. We need that again.
Bring a tattoo artist in.
But yeah, that wraps up our conversation. Again, thank you so much for joining us, Emma and Claire. Please, everybody, go listen to the Love to See It podcast. Again, Webby nominated podcast, I should say. Sorry about that.
Thank you. That's very important to us.
And our pleasure.
Thank you so much for having us.
Where can people find you? What are your socials?
You can find the pod on Instagram at Claire and Emma Pod and on Twitter and TikTok at Love to See It Pod. And you can find me on various social media at Emma Lady Rose.
And I'm at Claire E. Fallon on the socials. I have made like one TikTok if you guys want to check that out. I think it was about the courtship. Remember the courtship?
Oh. Yeah. So that's me. I will check it out.
Yep. All right.
Thank you for having us. This was so fun.
Thanks. This was so fun.
No, it's our pleasure. Thank you so much.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then